Okay, yeah. So this is the first topic of this nanofluids presentation round, and our group wants to talk a bit about optical lasers. And during our presentation, we want to go first on the introduction. We want to introduce the optical tweezers to you, because I don't think that everybody has ever dealt with them. And then we go a bit to history, what were the discoveries and changes of the method during time. And then with the modern state of art, we go through modifications and applications so that you can really see how hands-on experience works with optical tweezers. And then we present some challenges of this method, because it's not always straightforward to use it. And afterwards, we have small conclusion to wrap you up and give you a small recap of everything we just presented.
Quick comment about introduction. Please remember, introduction yourself also. Just in case that we remember the name wrong, which is probable.
My name is Aitra, I'm studying biology and physics.
I'm Yelva, and I have a major in chemistry.
I'm an associate and I'm majoring in film and cinematography. I'm Ida, and I also study chemistry.
Okay, and now we introduce you to the optical tweezers. So optical tweezers, or optical traps, can be used to manipulate small, or for example, cells or beads or something with light, actually. So basically, this is exactly what the name says, an optical trap. And here on the right side, you can see an example build of a microscope, which uses, of course, a laser for optical trapping, and you see a small bead. And additionally, this has an LED, but this could be a laser also, to combine it with other light microscope methods, which we will present to you further as well. So there are certain requirements for this setup. So we need a laser here, of course, for trapping, which is a Gaussian laser profile. This is very important, because I don't know whether you are familiar with that, but this looks really then, so the distribution of this laser light looks like a Gaussian function, so that we have here in the middle, not that silly, here in the middle of the laser beam, the highest intensity of photons, more than outside. And of course, we need high intensities, because this trap force is then depending on this intensity, which I will explain to you with some maths in the next slide. And we use a near infrared laser for trapping, which is also important, because then there is not that much absorption of the, for example, cellular components or anything like water, so that we have least interference or absorption of this light by other components within our microscopic setup. And yeah, then we have a force and position detection afterwards here, and our detector for that. We have, of course, our molecule or our bead trapped in the focal plane. So we have then our light coming from here, and here we have then a beam splitter, which is mostly by, in this paper, they say device from piezo stages of piezo movable mirrors. And then we have some lenses focusing here, and then a dichroic mirror. And then the most important thing is that we have two lenses. One is focusing this light into this focal point, and in this focal point, we then can trap our beam. And then afterwards, the light is again broadened and then detected. And the same works here for this LED or the laser using some other light microscopy methods. And then, of course, we then have an additional camera here if you want to get something as well. But how does these traps work? It looks kind of complicated, but once you went through all these vectors, you might understand why this beam is kept inside of this light beam here. Because you can see here two, I would say, light beams, or some two vectors of light approaching this beam. So we have them here, our first vector coming from this side and another vector from this side. And you can see at the outcome here, it's then with the eye, I don't know whether you can see, but this is then for incident, and the S here is for the outcoming. And you can see they have different directions. And these are summed up here, these triangles, and these deltas underneath are then the changes between these two incident and outcoming lights. And there is like this requirement for the system that momentum is conserved and it can't change. So the overall momentum of the system needs to be the same afterwards. So if we then sum up here our two changes, then the resulting delta k, which is then the movement of OB, results from these changes in light. So basically, the strapping occurs by the light interacting and scattering at our OB. And because of momentum conversion, you can imagine like a pool ball when you play billiard or something. It's then kept inside here the focus of our OB. And by that, with different intensities, we have different traction forces, I would say, to this. And by that, the beam is kept with a certain force in our laser focal, in our focal point, and then we have further applications to then deal with that and measure the beams for that.
Yeah, thank you. Now a little bit about history. Dr. Arthur Ashkin has invented the optical communication circuit for biological research. You can see him here sitting closer to the camera. For his invention of optical fusion and the application, he was awarded the Nobel Prize in 2018. Throughout his work from 1960s to 1980s, his optical traps had three main designs. The first one came in 1961. It was a two-beam optical trap, the first of its kind. Here, unlike the previous slide, the actual optical tweezer setup, it used unfocused two laser beams, which were also Gaussian beams. And in an unfocused laser beam, a single unfocused laser beam, the incoming rays scatter away from the beam's axis and give the particle a forward momentum, which makes it travel along the beam propagation direction. However, when there is a second identical opposing beam, the scattering forces cancel out and the particle is trapped in the equilibrium mode, in the equilibrium position between the two lasers. The second version came in 1971. It was a single beam levitation trap. Here, just like in the two beam optical trap, a single unfocused laser was used, though it was a single laser. And one important measurement was a 550 nanometer green argon laser, unlike the near infrared laser that we use in the optical tweezers. Here, a resting particle would be levitating up when the power of the laser would be increased, and it would reach a point where the scattering force that would pull it up and the momentum would equal out the gravity, which would be pulling it down. So in this equilibrium point, the particle would levitate in this particular spot for until the forces are equal in this equilibrium spot. So this setup was used as a force measuring device in the 1980s when it was coupled with a feedback control loop. In 1986, the final version of the optical tweezers came to life by Dr. Ashkin. And once it was first applied to biological samples, Ashkin noticed that the living organisms inside the trap would eventually be destroyed. And the reason associated with this turned out that the use of the laser of 550 nanometers laser induced the active absorption of photons, because biomolecules actively absorb photons in the ultraviolet and the visible region wavelengths. So switching to the near infrared laser of 1064 nanometers helped to solve this problem and minimize the photon absorption. So this was the final version of the optical tweezers that hasn't changed much ever since those times. So now we'll move on to modifications and applications. So I said optical trapping is a versatile tool in biophysics, and here's some examples of biomolecules that have been studied with optical trapping. And one advantage is that optical trapping can be combined with other imaging techniques, for example, fluorescence microscopy, and it is very useful in the studies of movements and undergoing structural changes of molecules. And we'll provide you some example of the modifications. One is time-sharing traps, where the traps can be moved, created, and turned off independently. And it is especially useful in the growth dynamics of microtubules. And the other one is optical torque wrench, which is momentum in Finnish, and it can be used to apply torque to the object. And these optical top wrenches are useful in the studies of biomolecules that involve tocks or twists, such as rotary bimotors, DNA topoisomerases, and helicases. And here's one example. Here, a DNA strand is attached to a glass surface, and the other end is attached to a quartz cylinder. This is the same fold of the cylinder. And the DNA strand is stretched, which is denoted by this blue line. And at the same time, it is the torque is applied to the cylinder by the optical trap. And this is the green line. And here you can see when the DNA strand is stretched and twisted, and you can see the point where the DNA strand changes its phase to this lectin information.
Due to the modifications of optical tweezers, there are also multiple applications that can be used, especially in biological systems. And it is all because of the ability to measure these pico-Newton scale forces and the nanometer length distances. And that's why optical tweezers are suitable for manipulating small molecules and small particles, and for example, microorganisms. And in addition to that, we can also select individual cells from a population, which is mixed. And for example, we can measure the motility of swimming, for example, bacteria or sperm, and then measure, for example, forces and distances and stuff like that. And here we have three examples of the applications that I found like most interesting. Ida mentioned about the motor proteins. And now I'm going to give you an example of the RNA polymerase, the gene transcription, and then the folding and unfolding proteins. And then in addition to these, there are other biological applications that optical tweezers can be used, for example, micromanipulation of all kinds of small molecules, or even denaturing process, like selective denaturing process of protein. So here is the gene transcription of the RNA polymerase. And in this method, dual optical tweezers are used, which means that there are two of these tweezers. I can use the pointer here. And then just like Eike mentioned, the beads or the spheres that are transparent and they are equal. And then we have the DNA between the two beads and then the RNA polymerase. And while the RNA polymerase moves along the DNA from base pair to another, the distance between these two beads is increased. And we can measure the distance and the step taken by the RNA polymerase. And it has been measured and it is 3.4 angstrom. And it is exactly the same distance of a base pair, of a two base pair in one DNA strand. And in that addition to this, the other application is to measure the folding and unfolding of proteins. And it is due to the ability to measure the forces while molecules are moving on undergoing structural changes, just like Ida mentioned. And just like before, here we also have two optical tweezers and the two spheres trapped inside of the optical trap, and then the protein between. And then the force applied by this optical trap to this protein causes the distance between these two spheres to increase or change, as you can see here, and that causes the unfolding of the protein. So basically, there is just an energy state that will form that will favor either this folded or the unfolded process of the protein. And when these proteins are then unfolded, they are the refolding of the protein can be investigated, for example, with fluorescent spectroscopy or Raman scattering. And this is important because with these optical traps, we are able to measure and investigate the folding and unfolding processes in the proteins. And then we go to the challenge.
So in terms of challenges for biological application, there is actually one specific challenge that deals with the negative effects that are induced by the use of the laser in this type of optical trap. So there are two main negative effects that arise from the application of lasers in the optical tweezers. The first one is photo damage. And the main mechanism behind this is the linear and nonlinear excitation of biomolecules. In case of linear excitation, there is a single photon being absorbed, and nonlinear, it's two or more photons absorbed at the same time. When photons are absorbed, the molecules come into the excited state, and in order to dissipate the energy, it can use mechanisms such as emitting fluorescence or making some intramolecular rearrangements, and it can also follow harmful pathways such as production of singlet oxygen, which is highly cytotoxic, and some other free radicals. And it can actually release heat. So if those mechanisms are applied to dissipate the energy, the negative effects to the samples include DNA damage, autophagy induction, and autophagy is one of the cell degradation mechanisms. And if fluorophores are being applied in this trap to cause, for instance, the photon fluorescence excitation, photobleaching of the fluorescent dyes takes place. The key solutions to this problem, and the key solution has actually been introduced by the Ashton himself in the early stages of the optical tweezers, and this was the shift of to the near-infrared lasers to minimize the absorption by the photons by biomolecules. Another solution proposed by the literature actually focuses on the type of laser that is being used in the optical setup, and there are two main types: the continuous wave, which I guess is self-explanatory, but the wave is propagating all the time, and pulse lasers that creates nanosecond or femtosecond pulses. And it seems that the latter type, the pulse lasers, are less favorable to you because they basically produce frequent consequent high influxes of photons, which can trigger the absorption, linear or nonlinear absorption of biomolecules, even if the laser is in the near infrared region. The second type is the thermal damage, and it can be induced through multiple mechanisms, one of which can be excitation of water molecules, because even though the near infrared lasers are used and the biomolecules are not as eager to absorb the photons, the water can be absorbing at this region and also specifically absorbed in the infrared wavelengths. The critical parameter in the thermal damage is not specifically the final temperature value that the sample set reaches, but the rates of this temperature increase specifically for the intracellular and the extracellular environment. Because it usually happens, the extracellular environment, for instance, the medium for the cell heats up much faster to a much more significant value than the intracellular environment. And it creates large spatial thermal gradients. Through multiple mechanisms, those large spatial thermal gradients, for instance, with incorporation of thermophoresis and thermopolarization, can severely damage cell membranes, which eventually leads to cell death, and cause multiple effects that are similar to those associated with photo damage. The main solutions here have been proposed to choose a specific range of the wavelength, not necessarily the 1,000 plus that are being commonly employed in the optical tweezer setup, but 800 to 900 nanometers, because the studies have shown that the heat release from those ranges of those lasers is much lesser than the one from 1,000 plus. Another feasible solution has been introduction of microflows, which supply cooler medium to the extracellular environment. And what it does is it minimizes the spatial thermal gradients that are within the optical trap. Alternative trap designs have also seemed to help with tackling the heat problem, for instance, holographic and plasmonic, three holographic traps and plasmonic filters utilize much lower light intensity than the classical setup, and the recent invention of ultra-refrigerated traps actually combined laser refrigeration and reduced focusing of the laser to create some kind of a cold spot within the laser where the optical trap is set up and the object, the biological sample, is being manipulated, which also helps to decrease the heating of the sample. So I guess that's pretty much what we wanted to tell you about. And let's run fast through some conclusions. The optical tweezers is an optical trap based on the phenomenon of radiation pressure. Dr. Arthur Ashkin has developed optical tweezers and applied them to study biological samples. He was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics in 2018 for his achievements. Notable biological applications that you have seen are manipulation of biomolecules, gene transcription of RNA polymerase, and measurement of folding and unfolding of proteins, and photo damage and thermal damage are the main negative effects of optical tweezers in terms of biological applications. But there are constant advances in the optical tweezers design and setup that successfully tackle those issues. So, all the references that we used, and thank you very much. Yes.
Maybe right away. So, what was the Cedar picture? So, the study that you were following?
The review article. It was the first one.
Maybe I have one. If you have any thoughts, I think it just explain working principle of AFM or can both microscope or something like this. So what's the pros and cons of these techniques? There are some similarities, so you can, for example, cool things with the AFM tip. So if you come together in the lunch table and thought about that. Okay, that was not the question, but you can then you can make up an answer.
I guess in the AFM you don't have this much of the laser focusing, which eliminate some of the negative effects that the optical curve.
Should imagine that maybe the optical tubes or optical structures can align the force you apply a bit more carefully because it's used with laser intensities. And then by adjusting the laser intensities or maybe the wavelength, you can adjust strength of the trap so that maybe the pulling force could be more sensitive. Yeah.
Okay. Any more?
Not so much for imaging.
But the AFM you can also do manipulation of molecules when you can pull these things apart. It just came up with the use of unfolding experiments. So there's similar experiments with the AFM.
For me, this optical tweezer sounds more sensitive than it is for very small molecules.
Okay.
And the same with small molecules, I think they did the same experiment with plotting unfolding data as well. But I think that the combination of maybe optical tweezers and other light microscopy methods with them, where they can analyze the folding again, would be easier because you already use light. So you have basically the complete setup where you can just then use light again to image another like folding processes or anything else. So then you have. Easier combination of things.
Now I'm thinking myself, so this device is actually the pros for optical tweezers as being a three dimensional solution. So that's also the thing, because an AFM you need a surface, and then even though the liquid imaging, it's still in a three dimensional freedom where you can then start moving in a direction or another. So that sounds to me more natural in our living cases.
You may have a new now, or you're looking.
Tell you.
Yeah.
Wow.
But when it comes to this, I think this the biggest reason is that doing with the AFM is much harder to get it in a correct position and get it.
Yeah. There is optical prism I have seen that did you look in a movie that the two beads are floating, one bead is floating and then it's a trap there. It's a pretty cool looking thing that just the beam and it's there.
There are videos on them which are kind of cool where you can really see how they manipulate cells and like as you drag them with the mouse on the computer, you just pull them there. It's pretty cool.
One thing that is not clear for me at all, right, because I never had the time to go. So you mentioned this turquoise frame.
Yeah.
How are you going to apply turquoise if you have a Gaussian beam and you rotate Gaussian beam? Nothing says.
I don't know about it.
formation of DNA. It has something to do with DNA is important, also about the transcription and that DNA is active. So it's basically a form of DNA strand. I don't know how to do it, and I'm really kind of saying, but it's like imagine that you have a strain and then you stretch it and twist it and the shape that is it's that.
As you say, it's always in a chromophore.
Another question
I'm not ready for. No, you explain how we can see the polymerase walk with what form. How do you do that?
With the optical tracks, because it is exactly. Let me think first, because there is the force, applied force, the optical beam, which brain about the force. And the force causes the movement. And then, well, I don't know exactly the answer of your questions. I just know that when we pull, then the distance is increased. And then we can measure the force, which is like applied in the sphere, because the momentum needs to be, the total momentum needs to be zero.
This is really good. You can get radiation from the focus point, the region of the cluster, and then you can see that it's not even measurable.
And then you have to move, I think it really moves the beam to keep it, at least it be there.
Or you can measure the note without my microscope. In a theater, you can control it in that position. And you move your being 3.4, and then you just assume that you'll be staying in a pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot really see that.
Yeah. Sure, we cannot see it, but we don't know what you move it.
Yeah.
I thought we can know how much you move your beam.
Yeah, I think you can know.
Yeah, no. We know very precisely how much you move your beam, and then we see the strength that it pulls the beam out. And then, in order to keep it there, you can move the beam and know how much it has to move the beam.
Quite cool,
indeed.
Yeah.
I think that means that even inside the cell.
I think like the most popular thing we had was motor buttons, like during the steps of music or
therapy,
like on my vision has been done.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, I think
First of all, let's go ahead. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.